Welcome to the Bayesian Conspiracy. I'm Yash Brodsky.
I'm Steven Zuber.
And I'm Lucy Belmont.
Lucy Belmont, welcome. We are here to discuss a very, I guess, infamous now gangbang.
Or famous. Is it infamous? I don't know.
Depends on who you ask.
I should have mentioned, I don't have any social media stuff, like a psychopath. I'm not sure what the current view is on this publicly.
You're a social media Kaczynski?
I guess. Twitter sucks. Facebook, I fell off in 2016. Reddit, I got off last year when they crashed Apollo.
Do you still check your email?
Yeah.
Okay.
I check my email. Yeah. I listen to podcasts.
Okay.
So that's my social. We should mention what we're talking about, then I'll mention the only way I've heard about this. I cut off too early.
Real quick, what we're going to be talking about is Ayla's birthday gangbang. And I have a reason that I actually want to talk about this. But before we do that, Steven, now that we know what we're talking about, you had something?
Yeah, I heard about this on two different podcasts. Mm. That's how I knew it happened. Because, again, I didn't see it on social media or anything. So I heard about it on... I might have heard about it from... I don't know, because it wasn't a surprise when I heard about it on the Very Bad Wizards. Mm-hmm. It's a podcast by two tenured professors at different universities.
And they're rationalist adjacent.
Yeah. Enough to make fun of rationalists.
Right.
And be accurate in their cruel natured jokes. But
and that it's still kind of like we're sort of making fun of our in-group kind of thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
And they weren't making fun. They were just talking about it. Hmm. And same thing with on Blockchain Reported. It was either the beginning segment or I never finished the episodes because they always get, not to shit on Blockchain Reported too bad, but they kind of drag on. And the longer it goes, the more just bummer it gets.
Yeah.
So I tune in, like, what's the funny thing you guys are talking about first? Okay, great.
Yeah, the first 10 minutes are the best. Yeah. But yeah, Tracing Wood Grains is totally a rationalist, so they're okay with
it. Yeah.
They get a pass.
Again, everyone was favorable of it. For me, it was just interesting because it's like, oh yeah, this is like like 10 years ago, if you Googled like, you know, rationalist something or other, it'd be like, oh, talk about group homes in California with, you know, harems and whatnot. I'm like, I know. No, that's not the majority.
Is that what you would get when you Googled rationalists?
I'll see if I can find the thing.
Huh.
I'll make a note. But it was like one of the more popular articles from somewhere. And so it's like, why are these the exports? And it's like, again, I'm more power to her. I'm glad you had, you know, it sounds like, because I heard about a lot of the logistics. And we'll talk about more than I heard about when Lucy gets to weigh in. But when I finally stop rambling, but it sounds like it took a lot to put together. But and so it's like, you know, more power to her. It's just more like, man, people do other cool stuff. Why is this the front page news? But in fairness to both Blockchain Reported and Very Bad Wizards, if they haven't both had Ayla on, I know at least one has, and they talk about her research and stuff too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like, here's this crazy person who had a big gangbang birthday. Mm-hmm. It was much more good natured than that. So
I mean, I think it's just because everybody is always fascinated with sex. Like, it's kind of the reason we exist as a species. And so whenever there's sex stuff, that's always what that's what goes viral. Like, everyone knows, oh, yeah, okay, they're concerned about AI. They have the whole being effective with your altruism dollars thing. But all of that is kind of, like, boring. You read about it once, and then you're done. Whereas the sex thing, you're like, oh, man, gangbang. Why don't I have a gangbang? You know?
Well, it turns out it must be really hard to put together, right?
So. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have thoughts?
Why it's so compelling for people? Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, yeah, sex is salacious, right? And I do think that there's something where it's people that you feel connected to. Whether you actually know people who were there or you know of Ayla, right? You feel like you personally know a person who's partaking in something that's typically only in porn. Mm-hmm. And so all of a sudden it becomes a little more real and maybe you have the sense of like, oh, I could have been there, which you could have been. It wasn't kind of open invitation to apply at least.
Did you apply?
No. Well, here's the thing. This is actually the reason why I wanted to have this episode because I opened the application and like I seriously thought about it for a while, but I've been to a couple orgy situations before, and they were very uncomfortable.
Situations. Orgy situations.
You know, a situation where a bunch of people are in a room and fucking each other.
That's just called an orgy.
Well, but when you do add situation, you kind of self-explain why it was uncomfortable. You know? It's like, this didn't feel like it. This doesn't feel like the porn said it would feel like.
Right. No, well, I mean that was a large part of it. Like, I didn't know most of the people. The vibe just was not great, and me and my girlfriend bounced actually fairly early. I was just like, I'm not feeling this. This doesn't feel sexy. Let's go home and fuck where it's better. I was worried it would be similar to that, and also, I don't know if you guys saw the sex factor when it was airing on X Hamster, but it was really cool. It was like a like an X Factor for people who want to be in porn thing. And in one of the episodes, like, you just see a bunch of dudes that have to... We are really going to have to put an adult rating on this episode.
I'm really looking forward to you finishing the sentence.
Yeah,
I have
so
no
excited.
Idea where this is going. Well,
there was a bunch of dudes that had to jerk off on one of the ladies' faces. You have all the cameras all around. You have everything. And, like, they're obviously, like, playing up how hard it is to perform under pressure with like a camera crew and everything for the show. But also on the other hand, you have to perform under pressure for, you know, a large number of disinterested people who are just there to do their job. And I was like, okay, maybe this job isn't that fun after all. But then I was like thinking, if I'm in a gangbang, I'm here basically because I'm a fan of Ayla and I want her to have a great birthday. But it's not necessarily going to be a great time for me, and I think the vibe's going to be all weird, and I just, I'm not sure I want to do this with my life right now. So I ended up closing it out and not applying. And then, a few days afterwards, I was talking to one of the ladies that had been there, and she painted this picture of the most amazing, wholesome, bro-supporting bros vibe I'd ever heard in my life. And I was like, this is amazing. I would have loved to even just be there just to hang out with people, you know? And so I wanted to talk about that, like what it was like, what the vibe was like. How did you guys manage to make it so, for lack of a better word, wholesome when my previous experiences had been kind of different?
Well, it's so interesting because I think the vibe at the gangbang is actually the same vibe that we've had at the only orgies I've ever been to, which were also Ayla-associated orgies. Oh. So I'm actually really curious, just for a point of contrast, what the vibe was at the orgy situation that you chose to leave early.
Maybe part of the problem was that it was a swinger scene, and I did not know that there was a difference before. I was very new to everything at that point. But yeah, apparently there's a big difference between swingers and your more typical poly people. It was very much sort of like, I don't know, people get together, they kind of have drinks in a mixer situation. Everybody just feels like they are putting on a persona, not being who they actually are. And then when you go over to the orgy room, it was the same kind of thing where it felt far more like it was a performance for others. It didn't feel authentic in any way. And it was kind of a boner killer. It didn't feel like there was any fun or connection. I personally didn't like it. I'm sure there were some people who that was totally their scene, but it wasn't for me. It felt very impersonal and not
authentic.
Yeah, not authentic.
Yeah, you're describing something that sounds like you're like scripted and weird, where it's like,
I mean, yeah, and it wasn't scripted, but it was kind of weird. It felt much more like people mashing their genitals together because they think it'll be a good time rather than people actually having a good time together.
Mashing their genitals together because they know it'll be a good time.
Yeah. Because that's what they want to do right now.
Right.
So when you say it was performative, mm-hmm. was it like people were having sex and other people were watching and they were trying to put on a porny good show for everyone else?
I mean, there were a bunch of people watching too. Like, it wasn't everyone was having sex with each other all the time, but it felt like, at least for me, maybe I was not in the right headspace for it, but there was a, I don't know, you're on your own, sink or swim. No one here particularly cares for you.
You said you went with somebody. Did that person have the same takeaway that you did?
She was also happy to leave.
Okay, so it wasn't like a just you thing then.
Yeah.
It must be that it was a kind of scene that just wasn't your vibe. Because mm-hmm. you said you were new all this, you know, the, I guess, whatever, poly versus swingers, et cetera. You know, from the outside, especially 15 years ago, this all looked the same to everybody. But they're different perspectives, and they're different vibes on the inside too, you know? This isn't like a, you know, a keys party where you put your keys in a bowl and fuck whoever's keys you take out. Like, it's super impersonal and weird, right?
Yeah, like, swingers very much have a thing where you don't want to catch feelings for anybody else.
I see.
Which is, yeah, kind of crappy, in my opinion. Not saying it's crappy for everyone. Some people love that kind of thing.
Did we say on the air yet why Lucy has special insight into all this stuff?
Oh, no! Lucy, you are Fluffer B.
I am Fluffer B. I was also an organizer, so mm-hmm. I did a lot of advance work and know the behind the scenes of how people were selected and how this whole thing came to be. And then I, too, am Fluffer B, the famed Fluffer who tried to match Ayla's body count but failed by 2 dicks.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I know. Next time. I'll have a birthday someday.
How did you fail by 2 dicks?
At least sometime in the next year.
Yeah, well, I heard you were calling them in.
I was calling them in. I mean, rightfully so. People were prioritizing Ayla, yes, and that's a good birthday. Thing. I would not have wanted to beat her. There were a couple times where people were like, Lucy, I hear you're the must-see attraction of the gangbang. And I was like, that is incorrect. Mm-hmm. That would be Ayla over there on the bed. Please mm-hmm. go over there. Yeah. So I think she got 37 and I got 35. Though I thought it was 40 because there were repeat dicks and I couldn't keep everyone straight.
Okay.
So at the end, I walked away thinking, yeah, 40.
Gotta say, impressed with the repeat dicks.
There was one guy who came in me twice and came in Ayla.
Wasn't there one guy that, like, or two guys that were 6 times?
Six times. There were 2 6-timers. That's what's insane. Happening?
I know of a guy like that. It's crazy when people, yeah, have that particular biology.
Two questions. One will be quick. How long was the whole affair? Because that six times would be much how impressive that will be determined by how long this whole thing took.
I want to say like 3 hours.
Okay, that's super impressive.
Yeah.
And so you
this
mentioned
this is not a multi-day affair.
Yeah.
You mentioned Fluffer B. I think we should zoom out a bit because not everyone has context for.
Yeah, let's talk about this whole thing from the beginning.
Yeah.
Because, okay, real quick before we do that, your other orgies that you were in had a very different vibe. I was curious what the vibe is that the ones you were at.
Well, I would say the vibe at those orgies was actually, in a way, more similar to the gangbang, where it was, like, really collaborative and friendly and even silly and open and, I would say, very authentic, like, in considerable contrast to what you're describing.
Do most of the people there already know each other?
I would say a good portion of them know each other, but for example, the first one I went to, which was only back in October, it was my first ever sex party. I didn't know, I guess I knew one person there.
Mm.
And maybe it was a 25 person event. And there were a number of new people as well who I don't think knew anyone.
Huh, okay.
Or maybe knew one person and had been brought in for a reason.
Yeah.
It'd be so weird to go and not know anybody. Be like, I heard there was a party here.
I don't know how you'd even. You have to know somebody, people, or else you're not going to get an invite.
I mean, at the gangbang, there were a ton of people who didn't know anyone.
That's true, yeah. But the gangbang is a special occasion.
It is a special occasion. Yeah.
Okay, so let's start off with the gangbang, because the vibe setting, I think, starts from like the very beginning.
I can summarize my quick understanding and tell me if I'm missing any important pieces. Mm-hmm. Was that she put out like a tweet or something, probably because that's her main point of contact for, hey, this is my birthday party plan. Here's the application link.
Mm-hmm.
I think Blockchain Reported like summarized the numbers, and it was like hundreds of applicants.
Over 1,000, I think, like 1,600.
Okay, yeah. And then some of those got screened out like before they even got like the second layer of looking at, right?
Well, Jesus and Ayla's dad applied a number of times, and we did have to throw those away.
Jesus Christ.
I'm assuming
someone wrote in those names.
Yeah, those are trolls. Yeah. Yeah, we had a bunch of trolls. I mean, maybe 100 or something. We had a number of trolls.
Okay. I'm glad to hear that her actual father did. Okay, I don't
see,
get
if
back
the
on
actual
track.
Jesus showed up, though, that would be awesome.
Why did we screen out Jesus?
Yeah, that wasn't
ushered in the second coming of Christ.
And he loves prostitutes.
That's true.
The second coming.
Yeah.
Good
the
pun.
The second coming. Okay.
He was the guy who came six times.
Yes. And third.
On the third day, yeah. So then, it narrowed down to, what, 42 male attendees at the end? After so it was like application, filtering, and then, I guess, interviews? And then how many men were total were invited to actually show up physically?
I think that we invited maybe 60-some-odd guys, and then of those, yeah, 42, I believe, did make it.
I remember, I thought it was 42 because that number is a special nerd number, so I thought that was appropriate for
that's
a,
correct.
For
I think
like
we had 43, and then one guy flaked at the very end, but of people who said they'd be there, yeah, we only lost one.
That's kind of amazing that you managed to get the magic number entirely by coincidence.
Yeah.
So what did you filter for?
The initial stages were things like trolls or people who just put no effort in and didn't like really complete the application correctly. And then we had a number of questions about the demeanor, the ideal demeanor of a gangbangee. Mm-hmm. And of course, no one would know what the kind of correct answer there is. But in the case of Ayla, it's people who like a struggling and overwhelmed gangbangy rather than like a sweet and eager one. So people who really wanted sweet and eager and would potentially not like struggling, we eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of ranked people in order of like this, how well aligned we thought they were with Ayla's kink in this instance.
Mm-hmm.
And then started interviewing them in that order, along with like some other criteria around just like how good their application was, basically.
Okay.
How much if they seemed experienced, which was not a prerequisite, but maybe won them points, or if they seemed, I don't know, good-natured, basically. Cool.
Mm-hmm. So you were, like, screening for vibes from the very beginning.
Absolutely, yeah.
And the vibe was struggle fest, not cuddle fest.
That was what we were aiming for, yeah.
Okay.
Or people who would want that, at least.
That's interesting. I would have anticipated the other way around, just given no priors.
Mm.
But I guess as long as you're inviting them on purpose and it's like, you know, this is what I'm going for, then totally. But, you know, usually it's like, in my mind, it would be like, yeah, I want to feel comfortable. It's like, no, you know, uncomfortable. That's the vibe I'm going for.
Well, Ayla kind of famously throws consensual non-consent orgies.
I think, and she also throws every preconception out the window. So I should have just gone with the opposite of what my gut intuition was there and assumed that was the right one.
So when you say, like, cool, when you interviewed them, how would you judge that? Were you on video calls?
Yeah, we did video calls. They were pretty quick interviews that were largely to just screen for people who seemed interested, paying attention. Like, I had one guy who refused to turn on his camera and then gave kind of one-word answers. And I was like, well, you don't get an invite. You know?
How do you think you're getting this job, man? Like,
yeah, for sure. This is
it's kind of a job interview. Yeah.
Yeah. And I painted an unflattering picture of the gangbang too, to make sure that people wouldn't show up and then get disappointed with only a couple minutes with Ayla, for example, or if, you know, there weren't a bunch of other women there or something, and no one seemed off put by that. And then just some quick questions about how they knew of Ayla and her work, because she has a number of people who dislike her. Mm-hmm. And so we just wanted to make sure no one was coming for the wrong reasons.
Okay. Was anyone filtered out by like looks, like on the video call? That's cool.
No, there were people who just had like weird kind of antisocial vibes, and I personally didn't accept those people. But no, I wouldn't say that we were screening very much for looks at all.
I'm imagining the guy wouldn't turn his camera on. It's like, you're going to be there in person, right? Like, we're going to see you eventually if you wanted to come to this thing. I wonder why he wouldn't, what level of security he thought he was doing by not turning on his camera, but we'll never know.
Let's see, how else did we screen? We did a little bit of review of people's like public socials to just see if they had good vibes and seemed like they hadn't like made social media just for this or something. We were really trying to make sure no one was trying to sneak in a disingenuous way.
That would be me. I have a Twitter account that I've never posted to that I made like 4 months ago. Okay. So they're like, oh, he's clearly some freak.
Yeah, let's see. And then there was like the effective accelerationist got cut too.
How many?
I don't think there were a ton, but yeah, if that's in your Twitter bio or even made it on your application somehow, you just don't get nice things sometimes.
These are the people that want AI to kill everybody.
Exactly.
If I'm being uncharitable.
Yeah.
I'm teasing.
If you're being uncharitable. Yeah.
But charitably, they're the ones that think somehow it can't go wrong, which also sounds like I'm being uncharitable because that's so ridiculous.
Well, no, some of them think it can go wrong and they think so be it. They think, oh, if like the next iteration of intelligence is entirely machine and they do kill all humans, then fine. That's like the appropriate evolution.
Right.
In which case, there will be no more gangbangs and we don't like that. We're pro-gangbang gangbang.
There's also no reason to assume a paperclip maximizer would even enjoy making paperclips. And so you're not just like saying, oh, this is the next evolutionary step. It's like, no, we're just now, this is a universe with nothing interesting in it.
Yeah.
And nothing even having fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So,
I mean, at least if we made it right, the paperclip maximizer would like have paperclip gangbangs.
Well, and enjoy them. Would love every paperclip that came into existence.
Yeah. Okay, this is not going to happen now because none of these people got to come to the gangbang. And so now it's not going to get programmed in. You know? There's no one to report on the gangbang to the AI.
She did write a big blog post about it, though. So the AI will consume that and get a good idea, right?
Yeah. And there's going to be a podcast about it. Maybe the AI will consume that as well.
Perfect.
Cool.
All right. The future has hope.
There is a light in the future, and it is us. Do you remember, like, a dozen? More than a dozen? Less than a dozen? I'm just curious.
I don't actually know. I was not the one directly in charge of this. This is a Nate choice more than anything.
All right.
But we were all on board as the organizers.
Excellent. How much work was this?
It was a lot of work. Yeah. I think I personally conducted 29 interviews and then had additional time slots where people no-showed. If you no-showed, you also didn't get to come.
Obviously.
Be responsible.
Because
we want people who are going to show up and follow the rules.
Yeah.
So anyway, each interview was only 10 minutes, but still that adds up to quite a bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
That's the time I put in. I mean, Nate put in considerably more time than I did. And then we had, I think, 5 of us conducting interviews in total. So yeah, considerable work up front.
This is one of the things I really love about this. In addition to all the other stuff we'll get into, like, it was such a work of, we love our friend and we're going to put in so much work to make this a great birthday for her.
Absolutely.
You don't do this for people that you don't have a lot of positive feelings for.
True.
And it's so nice to see people doing that for their friends, you know?
That is already contributing to the wholesomeness factor that you talked about.
Yeah.
I didn't read the blog post. What was it, like my gangbang birthday or something?
You can go to ayla.substack.com.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably the second or third post down.
I won't do that right now, though. But okay. Later, yeah.
I think it's our most read blog post ever.
Oh, wow. That was fast.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, in retrospect, that's not surprising. I was like, it just went up. How could it be the most read already? I'm like, now, what are you talking about, Inyash? Obviously.
So I thought it would be the reporting on, you know, her giant surveys. It was probably linked to by like more sources than the sciencey stuff.
Right.
So,
and the sciencey stuff, you got to like read about numbers and graphs and shit. And this is just like sex. Everyone loves sex.
Yeah.
There's even one picture of some butts. So
there was a picture of some butts.
Yeah. That's a bonus. So guys show up at the door and I hear that they are greeted by one of the kindest and most welcoming, wholesome people in the entire state of California.
I would dare say world.
Personally, I would agree with you, but I don't know. I don't want to make that bold of a claim. on the air.
I mean, I wasn't going to go universe on air, but I would go world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
the door greeter, just how does she greet the peoples here?
Okay, well, I believe they were actually greeted by some professional security guards.
Okay.
They got checked in to show that they were ticketed and had their STI test, which we did through a professional porn production studio and had sent directly to us. So this was actually a very safe sex gangbang.
And even screening for a new STI, which I hadn't heard of, which is on the rise, apparently.
True.
What was this one called?
Monkeypox.
No.
Yeah, I know.
No.
What is this one called?
Right, it's so new.
It might be in the post. I chuckled.
No, it's definitely in the post. Yeah.
I chuckled while you were talking. Just to be clear, I wasn't laughing at anything you said. I found the post, and the first thing I saw was it opened with a quote from Nelson Mandela. That's why I laughed. So good.
Which apparently some people didn't like. I'm like, do you not have senses of humor?
One of my friends was like, that quote was a bit much. And I was like, that's the point. It's funny.
Yeah.
Do you know what humor is?
Right.
If you didn't know it was trying to be funny, I guess someone might take it the wrong way. But then they're just totally not picking up the vibe, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
And what? Did Mandela not fuck?
Probably not 42 people in one day.
We don't know that.
That's true. He was a world leader.
I heard he could fuck.
I did not hear that, but it's good to know. Now I've heard that.
Well, you heard it here first.
I did.
Nelson Mandela could fuck.
And what better source than the Basin Conspiracy Podcast for all your facts about fucking and world leaders.
Okay. So they made it past the security table and then were greeted by the kindest ray of sunshine human being in the universe,
mm-hmm.
who took them into the coat room where they were asked to strip and put all of their clothes and electronics into a trash bag, which was labeled with a number. And they were given one of the famed, I went to Ayla's birthday gangbang and all I got was this bathrobe and to fuck a porn star bathrobes. And where they changed into that and put on a name tag and then got to enter the common space where they could mill about with other people wearing matching bathrobes.
Now, I heard that that's just a good idea for security reasons, so nobody, like, sneakily whips out a camera or anything. But also, I don't remember if this was actually in Ayla's post or later Twitter post or something, where she said, actually, this seemed like a really good idea because forcing everybody to first strip naked and then don a new costume, like, changes the psychological aspect. Like, you're entering a new place and you have left behind the outer world and are now in a new... She didn't use the word sacred space, but to me it's almost like a more sacred space, you know, when you're only allowed if you're wearing this certain ritual costume.
I think that's true. There was a sense of like, oh, we're all in this together now. Mm. We're all wearing something that's like slightly silly and also kind of sex appropriate. It kind of had like a maybe Hugh Hefner vibe or something like that.
Were they red velvet robes?
They were not red velvet.
I think that's what Hugh Hefner's... Weren't his red?
I believe so. At least that's what the stereotypical picture you see.
I don't think we had the budget for that, unfortunately.
Oh, okay. The other cool thing about having everyone don the same outfit, though, is that it removes any... If anyone made it through the filtering and screening processes with any, like, whatever, posturing, social status, mongering, it's like, nah, yeah, you had your $8,000 watch on, and now you're wearing a robe like me, mm-hmm. right? So there's no one's, like, gets to puff out their chest and be like, look at how expensive all my stuff is or whatever.
Yeah.
But maybe those people wouldn't have shown up in the first place.
Again, having met the coat check lady and just how amazingly nice and nurturing she is, that had to be the most fantastic vibe setting to begin with. I'm assuming she like didn't watch or anything while they stripped and donned the
I can't room? Speak to that. I wasn't okay. in the room, but knowing her as well, I would guess that she was not watching them too closely. I think we had talks of whether or not she should be doing penis checks?
Mm.
What were we looking for? Maybe STIs or something?
The little, you know, Saturday Night Special strap to the penis?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. It must have been an STI thing, and I believe we decided against that. Did she mention it to you?
She did mention it. She definitely said she would not be anywhere in
I don't think that happened. Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I do imagine that was the best vibe set. I mean, I think the check-in table was pretty friendly vibes. It sounds intimidating with two security people, but I think it was jokes and good times all around. And then, yeah, the coat check woman is really smiley, really friendly, and make anyone feel comfortable and safe to come ask questions and be themselves.
Mm-hmm. And then everybody, I believe, gathers in an antechamber beforehand to have like a talk.
Yeah, there was milling about, which I had a lot of fun. Some of the fluffers were feeling shy, but I was like, this is great. I interviewed like half these people. I want to come meet everyone. There were snacks.
I didn't realize that you were out there in the pre-area chatting with people.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was just the dudes kind of milling about waiting for things to start.
No, I chatted with everyone. I had so much fun.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah.
How long did that last?
A good long time. 20, 30 minutes, I want to say. And then we all went to the backyard.
Wait. Before we go on, what was it like chatting with the guys?
Well, it was fun. I recognized some people from the interviews, and some people recognized me. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, a bunch of people flew in. So there, it was all the small talk was sort of like, oh, where are you in from? Who interviewed you? Mm. Is this your first gangbang?
Cool.
How do you know Ayla?
Mm-hmm. How many guys did you talk to? And was it like one-on-one, or was there like several people talking to you at once?
No, we were kind of standing in big circles, and people grouped off naturally. And there was also some kind of techie talk. I would say like the overwhelming subculture that these people belong to was sort of like nerdy techie something. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people worked in AI or something adjacent to that. And I heard a lot of conversations in that vein.
Very cool. I wonder if any professional connections were made.
I'm imagining the networking opportunities. And yeah. I'm just going to give you my phone number, we don't have our phones. Later outside, we'll exchange phones.
Yeah. I mean, that's got to be a really special connection if you make with someone, you know? You see each other mostly naked. You both were inside the same person
at some point at the same time.
Yeah.
Know, looking at each other's vinegar strokes, as one TV show called it.
Vinegar strokes?
Oh, man, this is going to be stupid to explain. It was a TV show called The League, which wasn't that good, but the guy called it that. It was the facial expression one makes during orgasm because it looks like you're like, you know, smelling vinegar and it's kind of unpleasant.
Huh.
That's how he described it.
Okay.
So, all right. That's not the face I make during orgasm.
No, I don't think so either. Yeah. the guy,
I'm confident about this.
The guy in the show, it's a whole silly, everyone in the show is silly and stupid.
I mean, I know there's kind of a joke thing, especially hear about this from stand-up comedians a lot, that like people look ridiculous when they're having sex, but I don't think so. Usually people look really good, especially when they're coming. It's an amazing thing to
watch. Why would we watch porn if people didn't look good during sex?
Yeah, exactly.
They're performers. Is one possible counter argument.
Yeah.
But okay. Maybe the average person, because there was a comedian I'm thinking of, and he definitely wouldn't look good having sex. And he didn't think so either.
Are you thinking Louis C.K.?
No.
Oh, okay.
This was I forget the guy's name, and he's like, yeah, I got this big mirror for my bedroom because I thought it would look great. And instead it looked like, you know, this raccoon, you know, bent over and then just like looking up and snarling at the mirror.
Okay,
and
skill so, issue though. I was about to say mirrors during sex are a lot of fun too.
Not for this comedian anyway. But if it worked out, then he wouldn't have told jokes about it. So
no, that's a good point.
You mentioned
sometimes they just lie if it's funny.
I hear that too.
No. But
you mentioned. Yeah,
I know. I'm sorry to ruin. Now your faith in humanity is shattered.
So, like security, atrium, backyard. Where did this take place?
Basically, an apartment that gets rented out for sex parties. So this was cool too. It had like sex stuff all over the place. The art on the walls were all like really sexy photographs of people associated with that kink community, like really well done professional photos. And then in the main room where like the gangbang itself was happening, there were like professional sex structures. What do you call these?
Like sex furniture?
Yeah, sex furniture. That's it. Like there was a bed.
I was hoping someone heard my stupid joke when you said, what's it called? It's like a bed.
A bed. I mean, there was a bed, but the bed was like, the bed Ayla was on was like this huge metal framed bed that's definitely like sex specific. Mm-mm. And then
you can like tie people up to it and doesn't move?
Yeah. It was very hard to move actually.
Was there like sex swings? Or people there wasn't that people get tied to?
Wing, but there was like a bench thing that I was on briefly where like my hands and feet were tied to it and I was kind of like on my hands and knees.
Yeah.
And there was some other thing that I didn't get involved with that was like, what were they calling this? A reverse glory hole?
Huh. What where is a like, reverse glory hole?
Yeah, I don't know. I wish I would have looked at it because everyone keeps talking about it.
Is that where there's just like a block of wood around your cock and you can see all the rest of the person?
Yeah, I think it was somehow that you couldn't. I don't know what the visual block was. There was some sort of visual block involved. I'm not quite sure.
Okay. So just before you go outside, I guess, vibe, people chatting, laughing, joking.
Yeah, people seemed pretty relaxed. I mean, there was like a level of anticipation in the air for sure. Mm-hmm. But I think people were already kind of sinking into the vibe that was developing, which was pretty friendly. It felt a lot like a normal party, strangely enough, but with this sense of anticipation that something was going to happen.
Cool. Those are often very good parties when like just, I mean, not gangbangs specifically, but like when there is going to be some sort of event later on, it's kind of nice to have something to look forward to.
Yep. Yeah. Common topic of conversation.
Yeah. All right. So then everybody goes outside for the big
orientation.
Orientation talk.
That's right. We had orientation in the backyard. Everyone's in their bathrobes. It's dark. Someone stands up in a chair and gives sort of like the rules and instructions for the event and expectations. Mm-hmm. There were a good number of jokes, which I think also helps out the vibe.
Yeah.
We made everyone hold up one hand and solemnly swear to try their best to only come in the birthday girl. Critical instructions.
My favorite thing to come out of this is the slang term came in the fluffer to mean screwed that up.
Yeah, me too. This will never get old. Yeah. The rest of my life I'll be entertained by this.
Yeah.
And then Ayla herself spoke a little to reassure everyone that she wanted to be there, was very happy this was happening, and despite any kind of demeanor that she displayed during the event itself, she was consenting in advance to it, and she had people looking out for her safe words and indicators that she was unhappy if that were to ever happen. So just further reassurance, so everyone felt really comfy going in.
Yeah, that's awesome. I would imagine being incredibly important to a lot of people.
Yeah.
I heard at one point, I don't know if it was Ayla or someone, said that you only got 3 minutes with Ayla, so come fast. And somebody yelled out, I got you, bro!
Yeah, that's true.
So it was that kind of vibe.
Yep.
Okay, what happens after this?
It began. So I really only know like my part after this, because I went into the room where Ayla was. So it was like Ayla was on this bed sort of in the back of a fairly large, we'll call it bedroom, and then the guys like lined up, you know, starting at the door, and there were a few fluffers sort of like between the door and Ayla that the mm-hmm. guys would stop off at. Mm-hmm. I would say it was like utter chaos. I was trying to get them to all stop off at me because I wanted to bang every guy there, but it was more like it was just like almost a free-for-all, and the people who were sort of facilitating at the point of men reaching Ayla started just calling out, like, line up in order of, like, dick hardness. Like, we need a hard dick. Does anyone have a hard dick? So, like, it pretty quickly fell into
sounds like
this,
a lot of pressure.
Yeah, it's kind like, of, like,
oh my God.
Thing. Yeah. I think there were maybe, like, half a dozen or a dozen guys who right off the bat were, like, in line ready to go.
Really?
Yeah, and I think they all went first, and then it sort of devolved into this, like, how do we get a dick hard.
Yeah,
And so I had actually...
just for the record, people who may not know, when you're surrounded by like 12 other dudes, might be kind of hard getting hard sometimes.
Well, if you're starting by one woman saying, get hard, that's also a situation that's hard to get hard.
Yeah, right? Like, I don't have that much control over it, you know?
We need a hard dick, stat! I'm picturing like a hospital show where they're like, 10 milligrams Ativan.
Need 100 cc's of dick right now! I'm not sure how big 100 cc's is. Maybe it's...
We need more cc's. But more if you CCs. Read Ayla's post, you will find out that her takeaway on...
This part is beneath the paywall. Do we want to say it on the podcast, what her takeaway is?
Okay, if you read Ayla's post, you can find out her takeaway on dick hardness versus size. Subscribe for more. So
if this part, that's really kind of giving away the boat, though.
If this,
right, you can cut that out.
Yeah. No, I mean, it hasn't given away to me yet. I don't understand. So what?
All right, so this isn't going to go up for a week, so right. Check with Ayla first if she is okay with this going out on the podcast. But the thing is, apparently previously she thought that dick size was more important than hardness, and afterwards she's like, oh no, being in the top 50% of hardness is better than being in the top 10% of size, right?
Yeah, I would agree with this. I mean, I was in a similar situation to her of like suddenly getting a lot of dicks all in a row in a new way,
mm-hmm.
and there were just some like tiny dicks there. I've never seen dicks this small. I just think it's mean to put this in because those guys are going to be like, it was me. Like, I think I saw some real microphalluses. And then like one of those guys was rock hard. And I was like, this is better than that big soft dick I just fucked.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now,
do we have to cut that?
I don't know. Is it? Okay. All right. Microphallus guy with the rock hard dick. He rocked my world.
Awesome.
And we can stew on that for as far as that goes. Like somebody who must know that they're below average in size, having the cojones to show up to a gangbang is actually kind of awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I think the media presentation is that's a huge confidence killer, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, no, fuck it. I'm into it.
No,
you know, own my shit.
Yeah. I had a guy in one of my interviews ask if there were going to be unusually sized condoms there. And I was like, oh, I mean, I don't know. Maybe would you like to make a request? And I was like, well, you know, what direction is this going? Mm-hmm. And he was like, yeah, could you get small condoms? I just wouldn't want there to be a situation where the condom slips off. And I was like, mad respect. Like we love a guy who just knows what his dick size is and is prepared to like handle it well, you know? And like, it's still showing up to a gangbang and just kind of announcing like, yeah, my dick's a little smaller. I'm going to need a small condom, please.
So I've seen in real life, like one micro penis, and I feel really bad for the dude because he's such a nice guy too. But like, do they make condoms that small?
I think in the end, we just requested that people bring their own condoms if they wanted unusual sizes. Okay. So I'm not quite sure. I do know, I recently found out, there's a condom company called, I think it's called My One, that makes custom size condoms. So you can measure multiple dimensions of your dick and they will make you a condom.
Well, maybe I should just cut that out because I want to get paid if I'm going to advertise.
Yeah, I'll take a payment from My One, please.
Okay. Do you want to contact? I should try to contact my one before this goes out.
I'm surprised that this was a realization that size was less of a factor than firmness, because the phrase pushing rope comes to mind, where it's like, yeah, you could, you know, be swinging this monster hog, but if it's, you know, if it's flaccid, then yeah, you know, we can't work with it, right?
Even like half hard, like a big dick that's half hard is nowhere near as good as a small dick that's all the way hard, which I think was kind of news to me. I think I've learned this in the last month, 2 months.
I mean, I haven't been on the receiving end, so I guess I couldn't be sure, but I would have, that would have been my anticipation. Although you're right, I guess maybe you think that there'd be some trade-off between, all right, where were we?
I was wondering about like how the line situation worked, because I guess like 12 guys were just good to go and like standing in line with hard dicks, yes?
Yeah, roughly something like that, if I recall correctly. At the beginning, I was on that sort of like bench device where I was strapped down in doggy style, and I had another fluffer sort of facilitating and calling people over to interact with me, and so I couldn't necessarily see what was going on. It was a little chaotic. I had a lot on my plate.
Had a lot going on.
And so I think that even if they were hard, maybe they were looking to stay hard or get harder, or like maybe they just wanted more interaction before they just blew it at the beginning of the party, if they're not one of those six times guys. So I think a lot of them were veering off to interact with me and other fluffers.
So I guess there wasn't like a line necessarily. There was just a whole group of people that got called over.
It was kind of a line. Like I remember looking back at certain points and there were guys in line, and it was almost like they were in line to start with like the fluffer stations.
I was going
to
say, like, were the fluffers set up just before Ayla? Because I heard since you only get 3 minutes, like the idea was to like bang a fluffer for a while. And once you get close, jump over to Ayla.
This is true. Yeah, I think it was mostly oral with fluffers. I think I was a little unique in my level of banging, which is validated by the bar graphs.
Right. And that's just a lot of banging in 3 hours.
Well, like, 3 minutes each is actually less banging than just like a marathon sex session with one person, if you think about it.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm picturing something like the checkout queue at Costco, where it's like, you know, there's a handful of lines, but they're all like, but assuming there's like only one actual checkout station.
Oh, right.
And it's like, all right, yeah, you know, we subdivided groups, but we're all going this way. Mm-hmm. So it's orderly, but it's not like lined up at the British queue waiting for whatever, the train or something.
This is accurate. Like there was definitely some fluidity in it. Like once people were kind of front-ish in the line, sometimes they would come over and everyone was so sweet and polite. Someone would just say, "Do you mind if I use your mouth?" And I'd say, "Sure."
You know, that's awesome.
They'd kind of get far enough up, and then like maybe they'd kind of veer out of the line and be standing around waiting for their turn with a given fluffer while someone else was interacting. It was kind of conversational too.
Was there a lot of conversation going on?
I would say there was a decent amount. I was maybe initiating most of that. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Someone would like enter me and I'd be like, "So what's your name?"
Okay. I could see that.
Did I interview you? That's right. I remember you.
Okay. That would be kind of hot if you're entering someone and they're asking your name. I'm
like, I couldn't tell if they liked it or not. I was like, am I being
rude? Don't know. No. That's like, she doesn't even know who I am. Oh yeah.
Some of them were like, "You don't remember you interviewed me?" And I'm like, what? Oh, remind
me. How many
me?
Guys? Seriously. Interviewed several dozen.
Yeah. Wow.
Can't keep them all straight.
But usually if they told me a personal detail, then I was like, I do remember you. That's right. And then I would, you know, recall a personal detail and they'd be like, you do remember me.
Aww.
Yeah, it was cute.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Okay, so actually we jumped past the very first person to jump into Ayla. It was the virgin.
Our virgin. I'm such a fan of this guy.
He seems like the most delightful dude in the world.
Yeah, he is great.
I guess you knew he was a virgin when he showed up.
We did know when he showed up. I interviewed him and it didn't come out in the interview. And I actually said something about it to him recently. And he was like, "Well, you didn't ask. I wasn't, you know, intentionally obscuring it, but I also didn't volunteer it." But actually, Nate somehow identified this. I think...
Does Nate have a virgin dar?
Yeah. Well, there was something in their dialogue. So the virgin got kind of like special attention to begin with because he made a request to wear a heart rate monitor. And he kind of preempted a lot of the concerns we might have about it and was like, "Here's the exact brand and make of the heart rate monitor. I'll leave the watch off so you have no questions about like audio being recorded. I'm not trying to skirt the regulations on video or audio. I really just want to track my heart rate for this." And I think he said something like, "It's my first time." And it was like, just to clarify, do you mean first time having sex or first time at a sex party? And if it's the former, would you like some sort of recognition of it? And like, here are your options for recognition. This guy was like, "Yeah, let's do some recognition." So he got to go first in line. I think it was like publicly announced and we had confetti for him.
It's awesome. When did the confetti get thrown on him?
I think after he finished.
Okay. Is the right time to throw the confetti, like, when he first enters or when he blows his load, right?
No, I think it was at the end. Like, yeah, you did it. And there was actually, he really likes, like, bunnies. He's got, like, a stuffed animal bunny collection.
Yeah.
Somehow, I think Nate figured this out, too, and got him a bunny. And then Ayla signed it for him after they had sex.
That is the coolest thing.
This was a really wholesome event.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was just phenomenally wholesome.
Is it rude to ask, did he come in Ayla?
I don't think he came in Ayla.
Okay.
I'm not certain, though.
I was going to say, like, having the virgin go first when you only have 3 minutes, probably a good idea. Because
I'm 90% sure he circled back around to Ayla.
Okay.
I think he had a second round with her, like, at the end of the party. But, again, I'm not entirely certain.
Neat. Is it true that he yelled Leroy Jenkins as he was rushing the bed?
The rumors are true.
Wait, when did he yell it?
Like, when he was rushing the bed or when he was entering?
I think when he entered her.
Oh, my God. That's so cool.
That's delightful.
He's young, too. I think he was, like, 23.
I know a number of people that... Yeah, a number of people that haven't lost their virginity yet at 23.
I don't think that's so strange at all. 23 is pretty young.
No, I don't either. I just think yelling Leroy Jenkins as you rush a bed with a girl on it for your first time having sex. It's a vibe.
Yeah. It's great.
I can dig it.
I hear there were a lot of people, like, even as this was going on, just being very supportive to each other. I guess you probably had your hands full, so you weren't...
No, but, I mean, I did see it. I did have my hands full. It's all in the bar graph.
I need to find this graph.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, no, after you. Oh, no, you were having your turn, mm-hmm. which is really cooperative, non-competitive sexual mm-hmm. environment. Mm-hmm. And then the most... I mean, there were a number of cooperative moments. I guess at one point I was like, hey, I'm really... I had a knee injury a while back. And so after not that long, actually, the thing I was strapped to started really hurting my once injured knee. And I was like, hey, can someone get me out of this? And everyone right away was like, oh, here you go. And then like pulled over a mattress for me. You know, it was just really accommodating in that way. And then actually when the virgin got to me, I was like, oh, hey, you're the virgin. And so you've only had sex with Ayla before me very briefly, right? And he was like, yep. And I was like, do you want to try a new position? Have you ever done doggy? And he was like, of course I haven't done doggy. And I was like, when would I have done that? Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, do you want to try it? And so then we started trying it. And he later said that he was really worried about accidentally sticking it in my butt. But I wasn't quite sure what was going on. He couldn't quite get the angle right. And I was like, I don't know how to help you. Like, I've never been on your side of things. Mm-hmm. And so I called over a couple guys and they just helped him figure it all out. But in like the sweetest, most non-judgmental way.
Yeah.
Which I didn't even consider that it could go another direction. But later I was thinking about it and I was like, oh, that could have been really competitive or someone could have made fun of him or something. But it was really wholesome.
Aw.
Yeah.
That's the vibe I get from the entire event. I know at some point one of the ladies took a break on the couch or something. And it was just some guys came over, just sat down, chatted with her. They asked very respectfully, can I massage your feet? You know, is it okay if I touch you? And just had a good time, like, chatting and massaging and cuddling even. Like, it just sounds like it was a great time.
It's funny, not so funny as it is surprising. Like you said, it was surprisingly wholesome.
Yeah.
And even being primed that way, it was still surprisingly wholesome details.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't know what to expect, I guess, when you said it was surprisingly wholesome, but this was surpassed those expectations.
Right?
Yeah.
Was there, like, hand jobs at the same time as other sex going on? Like, all right. How many dudes was your maximum at once?
Probably four. I mean, I don't know, maybe three. Mm-hmm. But I often had a dick in my mouth and my vagina, and then sometimes I had to get my hands involved too. I mean, so they're yelling, does anyone have a hard dick? And I was like, I'm working on it.
Was it hard to get the dicks hard?
Yeah, especially, you know, midway through, we'd kind of exhausted the people. People kind of lined up, like the ones who were ready to go went first. And mm-hmm, then mm-hmm. midway through, I reached a lot of guys that were having more trouble than they anticipated in context, which, as we discussed, makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of nerves. There's a lot of performance anxiety. There's a lot of just other dudes around, which is not generally sexy if you're a straight guy.
For sure. It's a recipe for a flaccid disaster.
Yeah.
Who would come to this without performance-enhancing drugs, though?
Oh, everyone was on performance-enhancing drugs. Okay. We had them in a bowl on the table.
That makes sense. Arrived.
Even with performance-enhancing drugs, though, it can be hard. They just make things easy.
It can still be difficult. This is somewhat tangential, but this reminds me. We'll put a link in the show notes to a YouTube video. Shoot. It wasn't the D2F, the Silicon Valley calculation, and how long it would take them to jack off this entire room full of people.
Oh, that's right.
It was an HBO show that was really funny, tech nerd comedy show. There was a joke of like, I'll jerk off everyone in that room because they're like trying to get like funding for their project mm-hmm. if I have to. And then they keep like circling back to that. Like, you couldn't do that. It's like, well, sure, no, it'd be no problem. It's like, yeah, especially if they stood tip to tip. Well, hold on, but then what about the guys? You know how tall they are, right? We need their D2F. That would their dick to floor. We'll call it that. And, like, they've got it all broken down, and like they'd be hot swapping. You know, if somebody finishes, they're not burning strokes, and somebody's already. This sounds like it would at least pair well with the humor of the scene here.
Mm-hmm.
And the logistics, I mean, the spreadsheet we had in advance where we were thinking this all through. Even the calculation of how long every man got with Ayla, it was sort of like we had to reverse engineer it from how much time we had and what made sense. It was a little Silicon Valley in nature.
I love thinking. It. That's really funny.
According to the final stats, that is just the amazing flowchart that has gone viral with people changing the numbers in it. Sounds like slightly less than half the guys came inside Ayla.
I think that's right. I think maybe 17.
17 is what I saw. I skimmed the thing. I was looking for this bar graph you kept mentioning. And you said you were B.
Fluffer B. That's me.
You got the most color action on the graph here.
I sure do.
Yeah.
There were a few people on the internet who were like, who's Fluffer B? She seems a bit like a prima donna. To which I said, I prefer the term sexually ambitious. but also, I feel a little misrepresented. I was indeed trying to fuck every guy there. Mm-hmm. But also, I mean, look at the labor of love in that bar chart. You know, like I did it, that was for Ayla. For Ayla and country, you know. When they're yelling, is there a hard dick anywhere in this room, like I just got to work. And I was honestly, I kind of thought all the other fluffers were doing the same. And then when this got published, I was like, what were you all doing? Not to discredit anyone, particularly Fluffer A, I mean, her mouth skills, unbelievable.
Oh, according to the chart, looks like it.
Shout out to Fluffer A.
And nothing against anybody, because you know, I don't know these people, but Fluffer H looks like they kind of phoned it in with a mere, you know, sub 5 hand jobs, and that was it.
We want everyone to do what they're comfortable with.
Oh, and again, to be perfectly clear, Fluffer H ever comes across this, I'm just making a joke about the graph. I'm sure you're
no. I mean, I'm saying the same thing. Yeah. I'm a little bit like you guys. Do you know how hard I was working for Ayla to get some hard dicks in her? Mm-hmm. I thought we were all on the same mission here, but also it's important at sex parties that everyone do what makes them comfortable.
Oh, especially like some people who just are not comfortable with the vaginal at all. And like, I'm sticking entirely to mouth stuff.
Definitely.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
Well, and also if, I don't know, where in the line or whatever these people were at, but it's like, yeah, I'm basically there. Just, you know, keep it there. Then yeah, all you need is some stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Maybe that's where this person was at in the queue.
It's true.
It's all...
All theoretical.
Yeah, it's all theoretical. I haven't read the post yet, so I'm sure there's more details in there.
Yeah, I think actually when we brought the fluffers in, some of them were explicitly there to kind of like help organize and to like be just hot girls milling about. So
okay.
Everyone did a good job.
Mm-hmm. How many fluffers were there?
Six, if it went to H.
Isn't that more? Isn't that
eight? I think H is 8. Yeah.
Oh, God. Yeah, right. Sorry. F is 6.
I think that's right. Yeah. I think there were 8.
Apparently, it turns out there was a lot more women that wanted to be fluffers in this than was anticipated. One of Ayla's big takeaways was that actually there's a lot of women out there who would love to get gangbanged, but just it's very logistically hard, especially with like dicks that you can trust and environments that you could trust. So it sounded like there were a lot more ladies that were interested in this than anybody had anticipated.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. I mean, I guess I wasn't surprised, but this also aligns with my kinks, and so I'm probably typical minding here, but I'm like, who wouldn't want to get gangbanged? Right. It's objectively very hot. Yeah. Yeah, we had quite a bit of interest. We turned fluffers down.
Do you think that was the right decision now? Do you think more fluffers would have been better, or you had the right amount?
Well, maybe that came in a fluffer number would have been even higher if we had more fluffers. No, I think it was true. The right amount for that space. I don't know that we had necessarily room for more fluffers, and the ratio felt pretty good. I don't know, perhaps a male attendee would have a different take on this.
Okay. You also don't necessarily want a fluffer to be bored. Like, if there's too many fluffers and someone's just kind of sitting around.
That's true.
40 guys, give or take, 8 fluffers. So there's somewhere between, you know, a fluffer per 6 or 8 guys, right? That seems not all that bad.
Yeah, especially because they're not going to be spending all their time with the fluffer anyway.
Right.
By the way, what happens if time is called when, if you haven't come yet, you just pull out and move along?
I assume so, although I was not part of this.
Right. I should ask Ayla.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Or Nate.
Or any of the people who were kind of on. Yeah,
right there.
There were people who like helped hold Ayla's legs and, you know, they cycled through on that, I believe. Yeah, so after you were finished with Ayla, you got a gold star if you managed to come in Ayla.
Cool.
Or I think maybe a different star if you didn't.
I heard there was a different color star if you didn't. Yeah.
I think that's
But you still
right.
get a star.
You still get a star. Everyone gets a star. I think if you got a gold star, you were supposed to then get special permission to have sex with fluffers in this other back room that was like a giant, giant, giant bed.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not sure how well that was enforced, of like looking for gold stars or not. I certainly had sex with some people who had gold stars. I can't say for certain what else was going on. It was kind of chaotic, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
One guy had a gold star on his cheek, which was very cute. It gave kind of a festival vibe or something to it.
So they go in the other back room. What is that like? Is it just people milling around chatting, or is there a bunch of sex going on, or what's happening?
Well, so there's like the big room that has a couch and all the food and whatnot, and then through that big room there's another side room, like another bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it was like literally a giant bed. You walk in and then 2 feet in front of you the bed begins, and it's like the size of maybe two or three king beds all put together.
Okay, so I'm assuming if you've had a gold star, you've just come. Is the that bed mainly for cuddling, or is there like actual fucking going on again?
There was definitely fucking going on there too.
Okay, okay.
Yeah.
You got the gold star. You got the gold star if you came. I'm assuming you got to wear it for the rest of the event, so it could have been an hour ago, you know?
A guy with a gold star definitely came in me.
Okay.
This is the final guy of the night who was brought to me because I was saying, I know that there are four guys here at that point in time. I thought there were like four guys there I hadn't had sex with. Mm-hmm. Someone go find them and bring them to me. I want to have sex with everyone here. And cool. The final man who was brought to me had a gold star.
Was that room entirely just for fucking and cuddling? Was there conversation there?
Oh, there was conversation. There was cuddling and conversation and massages and chit-chat and all sorts of stuff.
Okay. Didn't people mostly congregate in that room, or mostly congregate in the room before with the snacks?
I would say mostly the room with the snacks, because it was bigger. Oh, there's also a backyard with a hot tub. So a bunch of people went in the hot tub.
How was that? Did you go in the hot tub?
I did not make it in the hot tub. I went out way at the end, maybe at like midnight after the party was technically over. And the hot tub was completely full. I think Ayla was in there at the time, and there were maybe six or seven other people. So no more room.
What was the overall experience like?
I mean, it was incredible. I think it was such a memorable event. I just love seeing strangers come together and kind of form a connection in that way. The way people were so collaborative and cooperative, it was like this shared sense of community with people who mostly didn't know each other.
And everyone was there mostly for Ayla, to fulfill one of her dreams.
It really felt that way. It felt like everyone there really cared about Ayla having a great time. And some people even said that in their applications or interview, like their main objective was like, oh, okay, gangbang sounds interesting, but I just want Ayla to have a nice time. I want to make sure everyone's having a nice time.
Yeah. If you're volunteering to only be inside to someone for 3 minutes in a room full of dudes, it's mostly for that person.
For sure. And so many people traveled in for it. It was a real commitment to the objective.
Yeah. And, you know, it is nice that even after that 3 minutes, they still get to have sex with other people if they still want to. And if those other people want to, too.
True.
Which at least one of them really did.
Yeah. It's true.
Cool. Did you have any other conversation, like, afterwards with people?
Yeah, I stayed and hung out pretty late. And then a bunch of us all were in an Airbnb together. So there were a handful of fluffers and, let's see, Nate and Ayla, and then another guy who was just an attendee who no one had met before, stayed after to like help clean up and give people rides and stuff.
Aww.
So there were some friendships. And I'm still chatting with, you know, on and off 3, 4, 5 people who I hadn't known before this.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Friendships are born.
Are all of them like other fluffers and organizers, or are you still chatting with even some of the participants?
No, definitely participants.
That's fantastic.
Who I'm sure I'll see again at some point in time.
Yeah. Would you like to see them again? Are you thinking about dating any of them?
Am I thinking about dating any of them? Not particularly. I think I wouldn't be shocked if that were to happen, but there's no one that I have in mind of like, oh, I really hope that happens.
Okay.
Any takeaways? Well, I guess so. Two. One, does this give you any ambitious birthday plans for yourself? And two, is there anything that, like, looking back, like, oh, it would have been so much easier if we did this?
There were no big logistical things, to answer your second question first, that I think, oh, we should have done this differently.
That's a sign of a good plan. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Nate's an incredible organizer. Honestly, he thought of everything. He's incredibly competent when it comes to anything logistical. For my own birthday, I am intrigued by the idea of having a repeat gangbang, but I think the biggest kind of failure point was the issues with erections. I had a great time, but in a similar vein to what Ayla said, it was not necessarily like fulfilling a sexual fantasy of mine.
Mm-hmm.
I think a sexual fantasy of mine for gangbangs specifically would be like a bunch of guys really ready to go, and so I could enter kind of an alternate brain space that I like to during kink scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I were to try to do a gangbang myself, I'd somehow want to filter better for people who are really confident in their ability to perform in that context which is a bit harder to do.
Especially because a lot of people won't know they can perform until they've been in that context.
Right. We'd have to be filtering for people who've done this before, which is a really small group of people. Yeah, I'm trying to think. There's a little bit of overlap with the kind of orgy scene as well. I do think the people who had been to orgies were all comfortable performing in that context. So maybe there is a good parallel there. But I would imagine it's still a different situation that might not, your body might not work the same way.
I've always had a much easier time when it's with people that I know. I mean, maybe part of the problem with the orgy I was in was that almost everyone there was a stranger. The only person I knew going in was the lady I came with. Maybe, like, if it's people that already know each other, it'll be easier for them to do.
Yeah, that's true. I'm trying to think. My first orgy, I really didn't know anyone there. Mm. And there was something kind of sexy about that. I remember walking through the room right before it started and all the guys were out there and I was like, oh my God, these are the guys. Okay. Mm-hmm. But then at the next one, I knew most of the people there and there was something a lot more comfortable about that.
Yeah.
Maybe like the kind of anxious, sexy feeling was gone, but it was maybe still there.
On a purely practical side, and maybe this isn't a thing people want to do, but there is an injection that you can just inject into the penis and it stays hard for 4 hours.
I hadn't heard of this. That sounds...
Yeah. It's sometimes porn stars use it if they can't perform.
I can't think of a situation where I'd ever be that desperate.
What about a gangbang?
Yeah.
I think I would rather tap out than, you know, get a needle in my dick and, you know, worry that it's going to be misfired somehow, right?
I would absolutely, for a gangbang, take a needle in the dick, but...
I don't have a dick, but I'm going to vote needle in the dick as well.
I guess it matters. I guess it depends on how much it matters to me that I win at the gangbang. But right. Yeah, and I don't know anything about the safety of this thing. If it has a 99.98% success rate or whatever, then that's one thing. But if it's like, oh yeah, you know, there's a 10% chance this will fuck your dick up, then like, no, nah, it's not worth it to me whatsoever.
I mean, it's used enough in porn that like it's perfectly safe once, a few times. But like if people use it for their career, after a few years, apparently it can fuck your dick up.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
So you can't become a professional gangbanger with this, but an occasional gangbang would be perfectly fine.
You can become a professional gangbanger if you don't need the injection, because then your health is assured and you get a lot of money for gangbanging.
Hmm.
And if you're a professional gangbanger, please get in touch.
How can people get in touch with you?
How can people get in touch with me? My website is lucybelmont.com. Absolutely get in touch with me through that website.
All right. Excellent. How much, out of curiosity, would you pay a professional gangbanger?
I wouldn't pay a professional gangbanger.
Fair enough.
This goes the other way in my life.
Okay, okay.
There goes that career track for you.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, well. There's got to be a market for professional gangbangers, though, if a lot of ladies want this kind of thing but don't feel the ability to feel safe. And also, the performance issue is a real thing.
That's true. I think women desiring this and women actually being willing to follow through on it are different things, though. Like, since I started going to sex parties and I talk about it with female friends, a lot of them are like, oh my God, that sounds so interesting, but I would never do it.
Okay.
And so I think that disconnect would definitely remain for something as intense as a gangbang for a lot of women. Although I bet there are a lot of women who would participate, especially if it was kind of something I had repeated enough times that they could hear that it was safe and a reliable good time.
Right. If they knew there were professionals taking care of things.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it sounds like I'm able to pay your bills with this, but maybe some side hustle, you know?
Yeah, exactly. All right. Real quickly, despite all the fact of the wholesomeness and the vibes, which I think is absolutely how the whole thing went off for people, there was at least one account I read where the guy was still very, like, happy he did it, but it seemed much more like a weird, existential, almost quasi-psychedelic, dissociative kind of thing that went on for a little bit. It's a really interesting blog post. And I wish I'm sure I can find it again and I'll link it. Apparently there was, you know, it's a big emotional thing to go through something like this. So there's more than one perspective. It's not like everyone was just like, this is the best, most wholesome thing in the world. There were some people who were like, this was wholesome, but yeah, this was weird. And I have various emotional takeaways.
Well, think about how different it is from the context of the rest of your entire life, right? Yeah. No doubt it would feel disconnecting in some ways, right?
Yeah,
it's a standout experience even for me. I've had a lot of pretty interesting life experiences, and I think part of the reason I was compelled to do it was just because it's new and different and interesting. I've been joking around that it's like a deathbed memory. Someday I'll be very old and on my deathbed and I'll be like, one time I was at this gangbang and I was Fluffer B.
Right.
frame the bar graph.
Yeah. Like that. Personally, that's like part of my personal religion, is have as many of these weird, intense experiences as you can in your life that are just going to be bright lights that you will always look back onto years later. because the vast majority of our lives is like schlubbing through the day, getting the bills paid, whatever. But every now and then you have these crazy things and you're like, I'll never forget that.
I strongly agree. Like anything that's novel and isn't too high risk for like permanent death or injury, you know, sign me up.
Yeah.
Sure. If it turns out to make me feel weird, I'll just cope with that. But it's absolutely worth it for the novelty.
Absolutely.
I agree. You know, even in other contexts, like I have a friend who skydove.
Mm-hmm.
Skydive just sounds better, but I think it's not the way you put it. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't appeal to me at all. I don't like the idea of falling from great height, but I could see the thrill of just like, this is like in the movies, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah, something just to punctuate the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, totally.
Well, and not liking something is still kind of an interesting experience.
Yeah. And I'm definitely capable of doing that with things that I don't like when it's, again, the novelty of it.
You've mentioned a few times that you do that with food that's really bad.
I tried sea urchin once in Japan, and it was the worst thing I've ever eaten in my entire life. And while I'm eating it, I'm like mindful of the fact, I'm like, you know what? This is an interesting experience. I can't believe people choose to do this on purpose. He's finishing his. That's weird. but yeah, you know, I still remember that, I guess. So
I get that. Licorice is the only food I don't like. And if there's licorice around, I eat it 100% of the time just because it's really interesting to not like something.
Have you tried sea urchin?
No.
Okay,
I'm curious, though.
you know, like the smell of like fish? Like if it just like maybe found it sitting on a sidewalk, you know, on a sunny afternoon.
Rotten fish?
Yeah.
Sure.
That's what I think sea urchin tastes like. But that can't be what it actually tastes like because some people enjoy it. And
Maybe some people just like hot, rotten fish.
Maybe. Yeah.
I must be lucky. I don't think I've ever smelled hot, rotten fish.
What? Have you ever been to a fish market in another country?
No.
Oh.
Yeah. We got this at the Tsukiji Fish Market in Japan. And it was, you know, it was a thing.
Yeah.
Total digression, but I also saw a guy cutting a giant tuna with a katana. That was pretty cool.
Nice.
So
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Is that not disrespectful to the katana?
I mean, I think it was the tool for the job.
Huh. Okay.
I mean, he made it look like it was, you know, he wasn't like hacking at it. It was careful, you know. He looked like practiced with his sword too. So, but this is pretty far afield. Anyway, the general vibe though of have cool experiences, you know, step outside your comfort zone. I karaoke'd a couple weeks ago with you guys for the first time.
That's right. I forgot already that it was your first time because you looked so natural up there.
You asked when I got back to the table. You asked when I got back, was that as bad as you thought it was going to be? Mm-hmm. And I said, is anything ever? And afterward, I was like, hey, that sounded pretty deep. but no, you build it up and then it's never as bad as you think it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, I went on the Mind Eraser roller coaster once to confirm to myself I didn't like roller coasters.
Mm.
You know, but I started with like, what's your biggest, scariest one here? All right, yeah, let's do that one.
Huh.
Do you now wish you could have applied to the gangbang?
I don't know. It would definitely go outside my comfort zone. If life circumstances permitted, I could imagine trying that out. That'd be interesting. But it's not on my current bucket list, no.
I could just imagine the most mortifying thing in the world would be not able to get it up there. Like, that is your one job. And I mean, I know it's not really. Everyone's there to support each other, which is why I think this was such a great hearing about it. I'm like, this actually sounded like it would have been nice to go to because, like, that's the terror for a guy, right? Like, there's no party if your dick doesn't show up. And
that's a fun way of putting it.
And this just feels like, you know what? Hey, it's all good. We're all here to have a good time and support Ayla. If your dick doesn't show up, that's cool. Whatever, bro.
Go to the cuddle room and give foot massages, man.
Yeah. And it just feels like this is... That would make it easier to perform eventually. Were there any people who, like, ultimately couldn't do it?
Yeah, there were a few who couldn't. And I think there was probably a selection bias in the ones I was interacting with who were maybe having less of an emotionally hard time, or maybe no one was having that hard a time. But the people I interacted with who were having trouble getting it up, and a few of them I know didn't the entire party, were having a fine time. They were kind of like, it's not working.
Yeah.
And I was like, did you take Viagra? And some of them were like, definitely.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens, but it's probably just not going to work. And like one of them in particular was just making the most of it being a party. Like, he was having a grand old time, talking to everyone, laughing.
That's awesome. That is just so perfect.
Yeah, aspirational, right?
Yeah,
worst case scenario, you would just go to a fun, unique party and get a free robe. So, yeah. Doesn't sound so bad.
I feel like I wouldn't be able to wear the robe, though, because it says, and got to fuck a porn star at the bottom. And I'd be like, oh, but I didn't.
Hmm.
The robe is a lie. I don't want to lie with my clothing.
Tried to. You can
sew it in. Yeah. You've been in touch with some of the guys afterwards. Have any of them, like, reminisced on this experience? Talked about it? What's it been like for them in the aftermath?
I have only spoken to the Virgin afterwards about the event itself. I think he's thrilled with how it went. I think he had a great time and is really happy to have had the experience. There were people on the internet who seemed to think that this was like a depraved way to lose your virginity, but I strongly disagree. And I think it's really cool that he made this choice for himself. And as far as I can tell, he remains very happy to have done it.
Dude, people on the internet are so weird. It is my opinion that everybody should lose their virginity to someone at least 10 years older than them, because then that's someone who sort of knows what they're doing and can help, you know, shepherd you along.
I definitely agree. And I think in other cultures, this is the norm.
Really?
Well, I think there are cultures where the norm is to hire a sex worker if you're a young man looking to lose your virginity.
Okay.
Which makes a lot of sense. And you would imagine in these cultures, the sex workers are particularly well equipped to do that. It's just like a huge part of their job.
Yeah.
I still think the whole fascination people have with like their virginity as something that they had and then lost. Like, I get that, yes, yeah, there's a first time you do this thing, but there's a first time you do lots of stuff.
Yeah.
It seems like a weird hang up.
Right.
Yeah,
sure,
high five to Leroy Jenkins for, you know, just grabbing life by the horns and saying, no, fuck it, do whatever I want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if this is getting too personal in his life, but is he planning on dating still? Because I'm assuming if he was a virgin before, he wasn't dating.
I don't know. I have no idea if he was dating before. He may have been. And I don't know how that's changed his perspective. Maybe I'll ask him.
Yeah, I would imagine it's a hell of a confidence boost.
Yeah.
And now he's had professional help from other guys being like, no, this is where the dick goes when it's doggy style.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll just make sure there's better lighting. I actually very much appreciate that he was aware that there are two holes back there and he was aiming for one in particular.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Lucy, where can people find you? Do you have a website that you want to plug? Anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. My website is lucybelmont.com, and you can absolutely get in touch with me through that website and check out my bio and a few pretty funny reviews and see some of my pretty photos. And you can also follow me at Lucy_Belmont on Twitter.
Excellent. Well, I am looking forward to going to that website for the first time and seeing what your Twitter and seeing what your Twitter feed is like.
Yeah, feel free to send me an email, be in touch. I love to hear from people.
Excellent. Steven, anything?
No, thanks for coming. And I wanted to make a... I ruined my trot to make a thanks for coming joke.
Thanks for coming... Not in a fluffer.
Yeah.
Doesn't really make sense.
No, that actually makes total sense.
That's it.
You're not there to come in a fluffer. You're there to come in other people.
Thanks for coming on the show and talking about it. It was interesting. Again, it was even being told, hey, this was a surprisingly wholesome and cool experience. I had no idea what to base that off of. And this sounds like just like the amongst the best parties I could imagine going to. And, you know.
It's true. It's absolutely true. So, yeah, you went from kind of skeptical to now almost wishing you were there. I can see it in your eyes.
I think that that's definitely the way the meter's moved, for sure. Yeah.
Oh my god, I remember what I meant to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, so I know that coming is not everything. I oftentimes have sex where I don't come and it's great. I know women do this too. Did you come during the gangbang at all? And if you want the answer to that question, as well as learning the secret to making Lucy Belmont come, and some pre-show chatter, plus all of our backlog of extras from previous episodes, become a patron at the Patreon for The Bayesian Conspiracy, or subscribe to the paid version of our Substack. Link in the show notes. Cool. Thank you for answering that. I know it's kind of personal. One last thing before we go. I hear rumors that you're going to have a podcast of your own soon.
The rumors are true. I don't have a lot of details about this, but the plan is to start a podcast with Ayla.
Excellent.
With much conversation around sex from a lot of different angles.
Do you know when that's going to go live?
It's a good question. I think we may start recording next month when we're both in the same place for the eclipse, but more likely maybe in May.
Do you know what it's going to be called?
I don't, but the topic will be good at sex, much like Ayla's blog.
Oh, good. Is this a limited series podcast then? Because I'm assuming there's only a few dozen episodes worth of good at sex stuff you can talk about. Am I wrong about this?
How could there be only a few episodes?
A few dozen.
I mean, I think it's kind of a
thing you can talk about forever.
Absolutely. I mean, we're still figuring out what makes sex good. I think this is like a boundless subject, really, right? Good sex? I hope it's not a limited subject in my life.
Well, damn it. Now I want to ask follow-up questions about what makes sex good, but we're at the end of the podcast. And also, then I'd be stepping on your podcast.
I actually have no details about this podcast. It's
it's about what makes sex good, right?
That's all I know so far, yeah. Okay.
Do you know what makes sex good?
I've been really trying to figure that out lately. I have a lot of notes on my laptop about what makes sex good. But actually, I'll give you one little takeaway, ooh, which is that when sex is good, I actually think my brain sort of turned off, which is something Ayla does talk about. Mm-hmm. And so I've realized that when I try to think about what makes sex bad, mm-hmm, I have a lot of ideas and they're all like easy to articulate. Mm-hmm. And when I try to think about what makes sex good, it's really hard to articulate it. And I'm like, what's that about? And it's because my brain's off when sex is good. And so I'm not thinking in verbal terms.
Yeah.
And so after the fact, I have to try to apply language to something that was kind of non-linguistic in the moment.
Can I give you a red pill about this for me?
Yeah.
I think I kind of agree with you. And I hear this about from women a fair amount. It doesn't suck necessarily. Like, it's great. I love sex. But like, you can't really turn your brain off as a guy, at least not for the vast majority of sex, because you have to pay attention to the woman, you know? And it's just like, as a guy, you generally can't have that level of sex that women do. And it makes me a little jealous of women sometimes.
Is this true? I kind of think that once you've gotten the woman to the place where her brain's turned off, you can mostly turn your brain off too. And then you're both just like sex animals in that like sex space where afterwards you're like, what did we just do?
I don't know. Maybe. I mean, I've been there before on LSD, which has been amazing. But like, personally, I don't think I have the thing where I'm willing to give up that level of control, maybe in the last minute or so. But for the most part, I feel like I need to always be paying attention and making sure things are progressing the way they should be.
That makes sense. I mean, it's a good way to keep her brain in that space, is like you paying attention and keep your hands on the wheel.
Yeah.
But I feel like I've had sex where we're both in this alternate brain space, and it's like, it's really flow steady and like animalistic.
Yeah. I've absolutely had that on LSD. Maybe I just need to open up more in my personal life when I'm not high.
Well, that's what I was going to say, because I can imagine, you know, you're kind of in your head about it, like, okay, she's having a good time. I want to make sure she keeps having a good time, which means I need to make sure I'm still present.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means I can't turn my brain off.
Right.
Yeah. So I get where you're coming from. There's so many sex jokes just available for all of this. Mm. This is easily our most salacious episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is actually going to have the adult content warning on it, which I've never had to turn on for any of our podcasts.
That's fun.
Yeah.
Ooh, exciting. Breaking new ground.
All right.
Yeah, this is episode 200 and change, so first time.
Mm-hmm.
Good for us.
Yeah, we are salacious episode virgins up until now.
Oh, wow. And the gangbang is what did it for you, too.
It is. Fantastic. All right. Thank you for joining us. Once you do have that podcast, I don't know, let us know. We'll make a quick announcement for anyone who's paying attention here who, for some reason, isn't following Ayla. I don't think that's a lot of our audience, but if there's two or three of them.
Yeah, you might get, you know, 60 new downloads if from people who hear about it from our show, not from any other outlet. But still, I'd be curious to hear about it when it comes out, too. So,
yeah, appreciate it.
Cool.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, such a pleasure.
Steven, welcome back.
Thanks, Yunyash. How are you doing?
I am doing pretty darn good, actually.
Good.
We have a organization that we partner with that does what we think is pretty great things for the rationalist community.
Yes. If you somehow haven't heard of the Guild of the Rose, do check them out. There's a link in the show notes to guildoftherose.org. They practice rationality the same way that a dojo practices martial arts. You need a group. You need a schedule. You need teachers.
They have been entirely online up until now. They started during the COVID years. But very recently, they had their very first in real life meet space workshop that both of us attended, actually. It was How to Be Fun at Parties, and I think it went very well. It was an alpha. They were still trying out the things, but it was really freaking nice to see real people in real space, and I personally liked it quite a bit. I know there's going to be another one next month, which I am also going to, and eventually this is going to expand throughout the nation. So this is a thing I'm excited for, and I'm glad they're finally doing it, because I try to avoid online things, sort of, kind of. That's a lie.
Yeah, I was going to say, man.
Shit. Okay.
But you try to avoid joining more online obligations than you already have, I think is fair to say.
Yeah. So I'm really happy about this. I like getting to meet people in person and do things in person. They do not currently have a How to Host a Great Gangbang course. And to be honest, I think they probably never will. But
maybe Nate will write up a course summary and then that can be used for instructional purposes for the guild.
That'd be fantastic. But they have a lot of other great courses that you can take. And importantly, they have a cohort structure that they use. Do you know what this is?
So that's going to be, you know, if you go to a gym or a dojo, you know, you don't go all day every day. You go twice a week or something, right? So the cohorts are the people who you meet on that routine schedule. And apparently Wednesday night needs at least a few more people to join it. So I actually would join it, I think, except for Wednesday nights are also the weeks of our monthly Less Wrong meetups, which means I'd be missing at least one in four or five of these. And that's enough of an excuse for me to put off doing that. But I have really been enjoying filling out the skill tree and the character sheet and stuff. So just a reminder, too, that, you know, if you join for whatever amount you'd like, there's still tons of stuff available to you. It's great tracking your progress in the dimensions of epistemic, pragmatic, and I guess holistic rationality.
Check out Guild of the Rose at guildoftherose.org.
100%.
Yeah. Let's move on to the Less Wrong Post section of our podcast. This is going to confuse, I'm assuming, a lot of people just because I expect we may have a number of drop-in listeners that have never listened to the Bayesian Conspiracy before to hear about the gangbang. And then right afterwards, there's going to be this talk about a sequence of blog posts written by some rationalist dude 15 years ago on the internet. And they're going to be like, what the hell is going on here? What does rationality have to do with gangbangs at all? And we might tell you if you stick around long enough. But for now, you're going to have to remain qualitatively confused.
Yes, well, that's a great segue.
Is it? I think that may be a stretch.
I think some of the best segues are tortured. So the post here that we're going to talk about first is Qualitatively Confused, written by Elias Yudkowsky, March 14th, 2008, almost 16 years ago to the day.
We are going through all his original Less Wrong Sequence posts in order, in fact, and just talking about them because that's how we do here.
That's right.
This is a rationalist podcast, first and foremost, darn it.
If not, we try to make it at least a close second. This talks about the difference between belief and truth and reality, which people often lump together in their head, right? And this has some great illustrations of how to shine light at the distinctions.
It starts out with a fictional interlocutor that I know we've all talked to before, saying that different societies have their own truths about things. And Eliezer's like, no, societies have different beliefs, and belief is a different type than truth. I can conceive of the possibility that my beliefs are false.
Yeah, I'm kind of my first postmodernist, post-truth person in college, and they were saying stuff like this, and to the extent of like, yeah, no, different people have different truths. And I was like, is that statement true?
Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about here. They have different beliefs.
This, I think, is in my opinion, one of the core things about rationality, the idea of holding all your beliefs probabilistically rather than binary, like not just I believe something is true or I believe something is false or I believe something or I disbelieve something, but more the idea of trying to put a range of how confident you are in your beliefs rather than just zero or one.
Odds is a good way to put it because the math can be a lot easier, in my humble opinion. But yeah, I mean, I would say it's a core tenet. I use the language of I believe this or I believe that. I mean it to say I'm extremely confident in whatever.
Yeah. But once you start putting a percentage on your beliefs rather than true or false, it drastically changes how you look at the world and even how you interact with the world.
Yeah. There was a great video from Julia Galef probably around this time, maybe 10, 15 years ago. That's like 4 minutes long. We'll put in the show notes that I really liked. She summarizes what it was like switching from kind of like the naive, intuitive belief that like you're imagining you're seeing the world. Mm-hmm. Then when you notice that you're having beliefs about them, you imagine you're seeing your beliefs instead of realizing that, no, what you're seeing is actually your beliefs about the world.
Yeah.
That was a profound insight that she summarized really well in that video. So
Eliezer says, suppose that I assign a 70% probability to the proposition that snow is white. It follows that I think there's around a 70% chance that the sentence, snow is white, will turn out to be true. If the sentence, snow is white, is true, is my 70% probability assignment to the proposition also true? It's more true than it would have been if I'd assigned it 60% probability, but not so true as if I'd assigned it 80% probability. Perhaps a better word than truth would be accuracy.
I like that. One way to get around people's confusion with words is just to find a different one that suits the purpose. Yeah, because truth is one of those words that sneaks in a lot of connotations.
The idea that, like, is the 70% probability true is an interesting question because there's oftentimes people will say, like, there's a 70% chance of rain tomorrow, and then it doesn't rain, perhaps. And people are like, oh, well, that was full of shit. I'm like, well, you're still going to get 30% of the time when it doesn't rain. So the best way to know if it's true or not is to, you know, add up all the times they said 70% and see how many times it actually rained.
Yeah, the best example of these for me is, election season, when you get forecasters of various calibrations guessing who's going to win the election. And then many of them are right, many of them are wrong. And when they're wrong, they're like, ah, you were wrong. It's like, no, I said there was a 60% chance that they would win. It's a different state of affairs to say I have a confidence level rather than like this is what will happen, right?
Yeah.
Those are qualitatively different things.
Elias just says that the nice distinctions of quantitative reasoning will be short-circuited if you start thinking snow is white with 70% probability is true, which is a type error. It is a fact about you that you believe 70% probability of snow is white, but that doesn't mean that the probability assignment itself can possibly be true.
I like that he mentions type errors again. I think he mentioned it in the last post. It also apparently applies to thinking and stuff too, but this is a common thing in programming languages with strictly typed and not strictly typed languages. Ask ChatGPT for more. But the gist is that you actually just can't compare those two statements in a way that gives you any meaningful answer, right?
Yeah. So actually going back to that, does that mean that it's the probability of rain tomorrow is 70% can't be a true statement?
Well, I mean, that can be an accurate statement, right? And its accuracy determines tomorrow with the arrival or failed arrival of rain, right?
I do think that's a darn good example. We should start using the word accuracy rather than truth for these sorts of things.
Works for me. I think it's accurate to say that that will lead to a lot less confusion.
Yes. When you think in probabilities, your beliefs and your beliefs about your beliefs will hopefully not be represented similarly enough that you mix up belief and accuracy or mix up accuracy and reality.
This is, I think, demonstrated by the fact that, like, I look outside, I actually can't see the sun, but because I'm not looking out that direction, but I can see a lot of bright light on the ground. I believe that the sun is out.
Do you see distinct shadows?
Yes.
All right.
So, but the thing is like, how confident am I that the sun is out? 98%. How confident am I that I believe that the sun is out? You know, like 99.998.
Right.
You know, like,
right.
So the odds, so this is another thing that helps kind of draw that distinction is that it's hard to be, it's not impossible, but it's harder to be wrong about what you believe. Your beliefs about your beliefs are hard to fuck up, but it's really wrong. It's really easy to be wrong about what's actually going on.
Yes. The last thing I pulled out of here is, I really love the coin example. I go back to it a lot, but he says, uncertainty is a state of mind. A coin is not inherently 50% uncertain of which way it will land.
Yeah, the coin is not a belief processor. It doesn't have partial information about itself, right?
Right.
Partial information and uncertainty are things that happen in us, right?
Yes.
In reasoning / belief processing systems. I'm trying to be as generic as possible. In qualitative reasoning, you can create beliefs that correspond very straightforwardly to the coin, like the coin will land heads. So like the thing is, the coin will land heads is a statement about what you expect to happen. The belief will be true or false depending on the coin, but there's no transparent implication from the truth or falsity of the belief to the facing side of the coin.
I like to think that the idea that a coin has a 50-50 chance of landing on heads or tails, it's entirely a statement about what we know about the coin. It's actually going to land on one or the other when we flip it, but we don't know which, and there's no way for us to predict it, aside from saying it looks like a fair coin, so 50-50.
Right. But the thing is, the coin is one way or the other. It doesn't have a probability about what state it's in.
Yeah.
Right. So, we often say the map is not the territory, but it's also important to keep in mind that the territory is not the map.
Yes.
The coin is not a belief, it's a coin.
All right, shall we move on to reductionism?
Yeah, let's do it.
I really love this post because it makes just a strong case for why reductionism is true.
Do we want to talk about what reductionism is first?
Sure. Reductionism is the idea that in the end, everything reduces to material components. There is no magic. There is no different rules that apply to different levels of reality. Everything is quarks interacting, or possibly if there's something even lower than that, then it's those things interacting.
Yeah, a century ago, it was, you know, atoms interacting, but the same difference. It's that, you know, stuff is made up of smaller stuff. You know, it's stuff all the way down. I like that Yudkowsky, he doesn't exactly lean on the definition. What he does is he says reductionism is simply the absence of belief, in particular, disbelief in a form of the mind projection fallacy.
I like this because reality is what's left when you strip away all the beliefs, right?
Right. It's hard to say whether or not I would be closer to reality if I had no beliefs at all.
Okay, I see. Because some of your beliefs about reality are true.
Or accurate. or, you know, less wrong or whatever. But as he says in the post, yeah, reductionism is not so much a positive hypothesis as the absence of belief, in particular, disbelief in the form of mind projection fallacy. And you want to avoid making type errors like the coin is 50% heads or tails.
Right.
I believe it is, but the coin is one way or the other.
He uses the example of a 747 versus gold nuclei interacting in a particle accelerator. He says, we use entirely different models to understand the aerodynamics of a 747 and the collision between gold nuclei in a collider. A computer modeling the aerodynamics of a 747 may not contain a single token, a single bit of RAM that represents a quark. So is the 747 made of something other than quarks? No, you're just modeling it with representational elements that do not have a one-to-one correspondence with the quarks of the 747. The map is not the territory.
I think this is well illustrated when thinking about video games. The NPCs, or everything in it really, is representative of something. You can see grass and trees and people and whatever, but there's no cells. There's no metabolism. There's nothing really happening under the hood there. You just see the outside because for the purposes of the game, there's no sense in modeling that deep. You know, if you could, if you had a computer with all the power in the world, you might as well model it all the way down to the quark, and you might get a slightly better answer. But for the purposes of something as big as an airplane or something as big as air molecules causing air resistance, you don't need to go all the way down to the quantum mechanical level.
Yeah. He also talks about how you don't actually even have to model the 747 at all. Kind of like in your completely simulated video game, you wouldn't need to model individual NPCs. You wouldn't need to have fields for their names, for example. For a quantum 747 model, it's not necessary in principle for the model to contain explicit descriptions of things like airflow and lift. A model that contains only elementary particle fields and fundamental forces would contain all the facts about airflow and lift and wing positions, but these facts would be implicit rather than explicit.
but Inyash, I can see the wings right there, man. Then I'm quoting from the post like I'm having an original thought there. That was he says, what, cries anti-reductionist? But the notion here is a subtle one. It's not just the notion of an object can have different descriptions at different levels. It's a notion that having descriptions at different levels is itself something you say that belongs in the realm of talking about maps, not the realm of talking about territory. Territory just has the one level, but we abstract things usefully at different levels. When I model you as a person, I certainly don't think about the cellular structure that makes you up, right? Those aren't the things that matter to me in my model about you.
Unless you're treating me for some kind of disease, maybe.
Then it would make sense for me to model you at a different level, right?
Yeah. I like his line that the map is not the territory, but you can't fold up the territory and put it in your glove box.
Right. Yeah, I mean, your map will never be as accurate as the territory. It can't contain everything.
I pulled out this line because it's going to be important later. When your mind simultaneously believes explicit descriptions of many different levels and believes explicit rules for transiting between levels as part of an efficient combined model, it feels like you are seeing a system that is made of different level descriptions and their rules for interaction. I pulled this out because I believe this is going to be important for the quantum physics section that is going to be coming up in like 2 years. So by then we'll have forgotten.
Yeah, that is something to keep in mind. It feels like you're seeing a system made of two different levels of description, but you're really not. The system is just the way it is. But again, I mean, a glass of water versus, you know, two H2O molecules that you're working with in a lab or something, they're both water. You know, in principle, they behave the same. Maybe more water behaves differently around more water than less or something. But it's all water all the way down, man.
Yeah, I think this idea of it feels like you're seeing different levels in reality, but that's not what you're actually seeing is going to be very important for the Copenhagen principle and the idea of collapse through observation. It feels like that's actually happening, but that's not what's actually happening.
Awesome. Well, in 2 years, we'll remember to circle around to that.
I really hope we do. To summarize, he says, this is the thesis of reductionism, at least as he sees it. Reductionism is not a positive belief, but rather a disbelief that the higher levels of simplified multi-level models are out there in the territory. Understanding this on a gut level dissolves the question of, how can you say the airplane doesn't really have wings when I can see the wings right there? The critical words are really and see. And just to loop this all the way back to our favorite fictional thing, this is how Harry James Potter Evans Varys could do partial transfiguration, by ultimately being able to completely dissolve the idea that there's wings or erasers and just really grok that there's just quantum fields having effects on each other.
Yeah, there's some context is important to make that point, Lantome. If, for the uninitiated, everyone should read Harry Potter and the Methods of Rationality, but if you haven't, Transfiguration there works more sensibly than it does canonic in the canon Harry Potter, because canonically there's no reason why people couldn't just make gold and food. In Methods of Rationality, you can only transfigure objects, and you can only change them for a while. Without constant effort. And like, so what's an object? Well, an object is this thing I'm holding. Specifically, it's not half of this thing I'm holding, because I'm holding a thing, a one thing, right? And Harry, you know, sits there and just browbeats his conception of the thing long enough to realize, like, there is no one thing, and blows everyone's minds by turning, what was it, a glass marble? Like, well, his first experiment was an eraser, but he blows everyone's mind by turning like half of a steel ball into glass or something.
Yeah.
So how did he transform the thing without transforming the whole thing? Well, I guess there is no whole thing.
Right.
Which that is the point. Wasn't that chapter titled Reductionism?
Oh, shit, was it?
It might have been.
I don't remember now.
Yes. Well, I mean, there's a chapter called Reductionism. I'll bet you $50 that's the one.
I will not take that bet.
Well, I don't have a good segue. Do we want to just say what we're doing next time?
Next episode, we will be talking about the Less Wrong Posts, Explaining versus Explaining Away, and Fake Reductionism. Ooh, Fake Reductionism.
All right, cool. Well, looking forward to it.
Well, Stephen, who do we have to thank for bringing us all this talk about gangbangs today?
I'm glad you asked, and I hope that Clarity Amaranthine doesn't mind the subject matter, and hopefully they enjoyed it. This will be the first episode that we have to mark as explicit just due to the subject matter. You know, not because like it's anything actually bad, just because it's things that are unusual to society.
Right.
It was a fun conversation, and I'm glad that event took place, and I'm glad that we talked about it, and I hope Clarity is as well, and thank you so much for your support. We appreciate it.
Yeah, the reason we can continue doing things like that is because sometimes people give us some money. It keeps us going. It keeps the show going. We really appreciate it. Thank you, guys, and thank you, Clarity Amaranthine.
The show does have expenses, and so this helps the sustainability of the podcast.
Yeah, and on top of that, you know, it's not like our time is worth zero. We spend a lot of time and effort on this thing.
We do. So thank you all so much. We really appreciate it.
Heck yes. All right. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Stephen. This was great. I'll talk to you again in 2 weeks.
Sounds good. See ya.
Bye.